market.
The S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that's unlikely to be called before the Royal Commission, but is not going to rule it out at this stage.
Possibly not.
Possibly not. I'm Andrew Page, and with me, as always, is Mr. Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, fools. Good to be with you on this bright and sunny Friday morning in Sydney because it's summer.
It is summer.
The 1st of December we're recording this. We are finally there.
Unless
it's in Melbourne, unfortunately, I'm going to enjoy this weekend. It's going to be, that's going to be absolutely bucketing down. So stay safe, Melbourne fools. We'll see you on the flip side.
And what are we going to talk about today?
I don't know.
Well, I think we should talk about a banking Royal Commission.
the Royal Commission link
Method to the madness.
We're getting good at this, mate.
Yeah.
Another couple of years, we'll be broadcastable.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
They'll start publishing this podcast.
We'll talk. We have to talk about that.
Yes, indeed.
We also have to talk a bit about the big, fat, jolly man Not you.
Oh, right.
You. No, the one with the beard.
All right.
Santa Claus. Will he be providing a bit of a rally? The so-called Santa Claus rally.
Bring
Is it going to provide an early Christmas present for investors?
Bring it on.
We have to talk a little bit about Oraton as well. The amazing turn of fortunes there for the iconic luxury brand.
Great products, not such great business.
No, it was. No more. And it's my turn to get on my high horse. Giddy up. But for, you know what we have to do, mate? We have to do, because it's in my favour, I think, as we speak, so I have to do. We have to do to do a catch-up on Bitcoin. What's it worth?
Well, Bitcoin at the moment is worth $12,933.
And is that Australia? That must be Australian.
Yeah, it's Australian.
And how much are you up?
73-odd%, give or take.
Yeah, maybe I was calling this one a bit too. So I was reading last night that it plunged 18%. Yeah, so
there was
kind
a fall.
Thought, yes.
Well, it plunged 18%, I think, after being up like 10 or something. So the day fall was only about 8%, which frankly is not too big in the overall scheme of things.
Well, that was 2 weeks ago. It fell 25% before surging ahead to new all-time record highs.
It went to $10,000 during the week and it went to $11,000 literally the day after.
Wow.
It's just phenomenal. Anyway, so it's back to almost 13 grand Australian. I'm doing okay, up 73%. Again, press this button. Okay, doing that. Hit sell. No. Still can't sell.
Okay. Bragging rights only.
That'll do, mate. That's enough.
We'll take it.
The bragging rights are worth more to me than $70, can I tell you?
I know.
When I get to come on here every week and tell you I'm right and you're wrong, that's worth it.
Yeah. Why did I bring it up?
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's talk about the Royal Commission. So, I'm going to keep us both to time here because this could easily go for 40 or 50 minutes.
That's because you know me too well.
Yeah, I am one who has not held back on putting the boot into the banks in the past. Not just for various social wrongs.
Why do you hate our listeners, Andrew?
But I think the investment case isn't super strong.
We all own banks. Why are you such a hater?
Oh, actually, I guess I do through my super. Yeah, I do. But you know, here's a couple of things. First, it was the government was adamant it wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to do it. All of a sudden, they're doing it. So there's the political dimension to it.
Yep.
There's the amazing, I think, surprising almost. Fact that banks asked for it, wrote an email to the government saying, yes, bring it on, we want it.
Mm-hmm.
We had the market reaction. Shares fell, I think Commonwealth Bank was down 2% on the day, although it's much more sensationalistic as the papers like to do, say X billion dollars wiped off the value of the bank. And collectively, given they're all 35% of the Aussie market, lots of billions of dollars wiped off there.
And more than that, about 40%, including all the other financial services companies from memory.
Man, just amazing. Where do you want to start?
Let's start at the very beginning, as they would say in The Sound of Music. That's a song they play a lot on Triple
A. Okay, all right.
So here's the thing. Where do you start? So basically there's been calls for – well, let's actually start at the very beginning. The banks have been very, very bad boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been, frankly, their own worst enemies, and we'll get to it in a second, but they really couldn't have – they can't really argue about the Royal Commission. Between the insurance scandals, the wealth management scandals, the money laundering scandals, the front-running scandals, the every week goes past, there's another thing that comes up, really highlighting how broken the financial services system is in Australia, and that's they've been worn down. Frankly, the government's been worn down by the sheer weight of just bad news. You know, there's only so much bad news you can go through. We are all to a person. Customers of the banks, most of us are shareholders, one way or another through in our banks, either through super or directly. Mm-hmm. As a community, the banks are too big to fail. Mm-hmm. And basically, they got themselves in this position where the calls became overwhelming and simply too hard to ignore.
Yeah. And at the same time, they are the envy of the world in terms of... They are super, super profitable.
Yep.
I mean, you talk to anyone who's held bank shares for you know, more than a few years, and they have done incredible things for a lot of people.
Well.
So there's a lot of mixed feelings in all of that.
So here's the thing, right? So the second part of the story then comes to... And I'll let you get back to what you were going to talk about. The second half of the story is then... Basically, the Greens and Labor, for largely political and somewhat ideological reasons, wanted a commission into the banks. Mm-hmm. The government folded about 18 months ago, 12 months ago, had a parliamentary inquiry, which mm-hmm. was supposed to solve the problems. Mm-hmm. The Libs have been on record for a very long time saying, we don't need it, it's bad for the economy, there's nothing to investigate, it's all okay, nothing to see here. Mm-hmm. And then the backbenchers started to cross the floor.
Yeah,
and so
a
couple of Nats have said, we're going to vote for this thing.
Yeah.
That made the government's position almost untenable. And then, frankly, the banks kind of, for all of the protection they've been getting for the government, I don't suggest anything untoward there, but they've been protected by the government policy, does mm-hmm. not have a royal commission. Mm-hmm. The banks also then sniffed the wind and said, actually, no, we really want this thing, bring it on.
Yeah.
So
in other words, look, it's going to happen, so we might as well be seen to have asked for it.
Yeah.
And corporate citizens.
I really feel sorry for politicians, and particularly for Malcolm Turnbull, but in this case, he was absolutely blindsided, right? He's the guy saying, we don't need one, we don't need one, we don't need one. Labor and the Greens said, we need one. Consumer groups said, we need one. And the banks themselves said, yeah, we probably need one. And Turnbull was like, oh, for the love of
God. All right, then, let's do it.
I'm trying to help you guys out here, and you've thrown me literally straight under the bus. Yeah. So I think that's important. And one more quick one before I let you get on again. The real challenge here now, though, is the terms of reference. Mm. And without getting legalistic and without getting too much into the process, I can hold a royal commission tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I can say, this is a banking royal commission, and this is a massive, wide-ranging royal commission, but all I want you to look into is fees on credit cards that start with W.
Right, and you've got 6 months to do it.
Right, and so, you know, and then come back and say, nothing to see here, everything's okay.
Yeah.
So the terms of reference set the Royal Commission's areas of responsibility. Mm-hmm. You might remember there was a, quick tangent, but illustratively, Ken Henry, who was the Treasury Secretary, was asked to do a review of taxation. So, Ken, go and do a review of taxation, but don't look at GST.
Right.
And so when Henry comes back and says, well, here's what you should do in this area.
That was the other thing, right?
The government can say, well, there's no recommendation for change to GST. Because you told me.
Well, mate, even the things that they were recommended to change. Well
there is that.
Thanks for the recommendation, but we're not going to get to it.
So in any case, you know, the question really now, and this is what we need to be a little bit careful of, we're pretty harsh critics of the financial service industry for all of the very right reasons. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very hopeful that they do the right thing. The terms of reference are broad enough to allow a proper review. Mm. And we'll be loud and clear if we think that the government is squibbing it and basically doing a Mickey Mouse Royal Commission with very, very limited terms of reference.
So where I was going to go with all of this was, you know, again, ultimately we need to bring this back to an investor's standpoint, given our mandate with this with the podcast, and, you know, shares have fallen harshly. You've strongly suggested that, in fact, I think it's pretty obvious they have been very bad boys.
Yep. And girls.
And girls, but boys, sadly, for the most part, as it turns out in our industry. Are there going to be more skeletons found is the first question. B, is that going to have lasting negative effects on earnings power and then ultimately on shareholder returns? And C, what would you do about it in terms of being an investor who holds bank shares today, assuming that you did?
I've already forgotten the first question. You asked me a three-part question. So let me...
How many skeletons are they going to find in there?
All right.
And Q... And R.
Subclause 3, paragraph 4. Here's the thing. I'm going to go back half a step. Okay. I'm going to do a Julia Gillard on you and say I don't agree with the premise of your question.
Nice.
I don't accept the premise of your question.
You should be a politician.
Shouldn't I?
Yeah.
You kind of said, let's take it back to an investor angle. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely true. But what I do believe is that at the Motley Fool as a business, for us in this podcast, is not just the shares you invest in, but it's the financial services system you are part of. Mm-hmm. And so I think even if you don't own a single bank share, which I don't, I have none in Super, I have none in my personal account, this is fundamentally more than just about bank shareholders. This is about the workings of the financial services system, how well you are treated with insurance, with wealth management, with commissions.
And even more broadly, the Australian economy.
Right. So, you know, I think we all have a stake in it no matter what. And I think this is a dramatically valuable and necessary inquiry. I was for a long time saying it wasn't necessary. I thought it was overkill. Mm-hmm. I changed my mind in August because there was just too many bits of bad news. And frankly, there's too much wrong with the incentives and the culture of the banks, and that's what they need to look into. Mm-hmm. So, that aside, are there skeletons in the closet? I don't think there are too many skeletons in the closet, no.
Okay.
I think this Royal Commission needs to, assuming it's given the right terms of reference, needs to recommend to the government and to the industry that there be changes to the culture and the remuneration of the banks. That's where it stems from. The fish rots from their head.
Yes.
Businesses, companies rot from their culture and their incentives.
So I, that's what I was going to say. It's all good and well to say you need to change culture, but how do you do that? That is really hard. I think incentives are what drive things. If you incentivize someone to, that they'll get more money if they do X, what are they going to do?
Right.
They're going to
do X. Exactly.
You know, so if you're a mortgage broker out there and, like, you know, we're going to pay you a bonus for every mortgage, you're going to make as many sales as you possibly can.
Right.
Even if you're starting to give mortgages to people who probably you shouldn't be giving them to.
You know, if you're, so you're incentivised you on your insurance returns, you're going to start denying claims. If you're incentivised to sell higher priced products, all of a sudden I'm going to say to Andrew Page, dude, you know what? You really, really need this expensive wrap, double leveraged, account keeping fee laden, et cetera, et cetera, with 14 layers of fees. But trust me, it's in your interest.
I don't understand anything what you said, but you're wearing an expensive suit. Maybe I'll take your advice.
The man at the bank said it's a good idea. Yep. I suppose he knows what he's talking about.
Yep. Okay, so that's the first thing that you do. So, but this, look, how many issues have banks faced over the years? And they tend to sort of sail on. So again, if you want to be pragmatic about it, you want to put those social concerns to one side.
Yeah.
We've just seen a bit of a tumble in share price. Maybe it continues to fall a little bit more while the process unfolds. Mm-hmm. But does the rational, far-sighted investor go, hey, this is a good opportunity?
There's two answers to that.
It's far easier to ask the question.
Neither you nor I love bank shares, right? So let's put that out there. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to beat the market. We've been saying that for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that as a result of the inquiry and the falling share prices that there's necessarily they go from being market lagging to market beating anytime soon.
Yep.
I also don't think for what it's worth that the outcomes of the Royal Commission are going to be particularly harsh. Mm. So if I like the banks already and the share price had fallen, I like them even more, put it that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think it changes my view of the companies. It doesn't, you know, I desperately hope that there are changes to the culture, the incentives, the rules governing the way banks are selling products, separation between their wealth management businesses, their insurance businesses, and their retail banking businesses. This is a massively, massively broken system. Now, frankly, I don't want to overstate that. There are systems around the world and other industries that are far, far worse. But given it touches every one of us, including people who have no financial savvy whatsoever, bankers need to be held to a much, much higher standard than they are currently. So I hope all that changes.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly positive about, negative for the bank's case. I don't think there'll be much impact on profit. So if you already liked it, you should like it more probably as the price falls. I don't expect massive swinging changes, but I also don't think it's worth buying at the current price.
Yeah, and I think the banks are obviously going to try and will cry foul over a lot of things.
No,
I think it's
will.
One of those things, and maybe if I'm being generous in some instances, they'll be right there. But I think it comes part and parcel of having, you mentioned before, too big to fail.
Yeah.
And so you have this thing called moral hazard, where when you're in a situation like that, when you are so critically important to the economy and you know you're going to get bailed out no matter what happens, you're going to try, again, rationally, you need to take these huge risks because you get all the upside and virtually none of the downside. And I think when you're in a very fortunate situation like that, greater scrutiny and greater regulatory oversight is just what necessarily needs to come with that. You can't have all of the benefit without having to accept some tighter oversight, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's true. And frankly, look at the scenario. You've got a situation where you have, as you say, the upside is bonus. Downside is I get my salary.
Yeah.
It's not a bad bet.
It's pretty good, right? It's pretty good.
What risk would you take if you weren't responsible for any of the downside?
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
We also have to talk about Santa Claus. Now, there's this thing, you may or may not have heard about it, but there's this thing called the Santa Claus Rally, which is this supposed phenomenon that in the lead up to Christmas, each and every year, the market tends to do well. It seems to be observed in the US market, here in the Aussie market, and other Western markets around the world. Share prices go up in the lead up to Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that you think can be acted upon and profited from?
No. So here's the thing.
If it was that easy, right, we'd all do it. And then the trading of that in itself erodes that, it arbitrages that opportunity away.
Right, and that's more the point. So the fact that, you know, statistically there has been a Santa Claus rally for a few
years.
Actually,
I would question that as well, but go on. I'll come back to my favourite rant.
I will be right. So there has been a Santa Claus rally. So people say, wow, it's there. I might as well take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And so to some degree, it makes us look silly in the short term because we look at that and say, there is no such thing, and there is. But it only lasts for a decent amount of time until, as you say, people buy into it and it arbitrages away. And so that's...
Kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy
of sorts. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. Until it's not. Until people try and front-run that by buying in November instead of December.
Yes.
And then when there's a November rally, a Melbourne Cup rally, we'll call it, then people will buy in October into the October Long Weekend rally, and then there'll be the September something rally and so on and so forth.
Turtles
so
all the way down.
Everyone tries to front-run the last one because the Santa Claus, already frankly, was born out of a January rally back in the day.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the...
You have to get in earlier and earlier and earlier to take advantage
of it. Right, right. And so...
And it's got nothing to do with what's actually happening in terms of business. It's just, it's a seasonal sentimental change that is a self-fulfilling prophecy of sorts that kind of is there until it isn't.
Now, frankly, you're entitled to benefit from sentiment if it's there. I mean, there's no rule to say it's not real money if you manage to buy appropriately on that sentiment.
Good luck.
The question really is, to your point, because there's nothing fundamentally underpinning it, you're relying on the market continuing to operate the way it has in the past, and the chance of that happening, given how many people there are, how clever they are, the IT they're using, the chance of that are unfortunately pretty light.
Can I nerd out for a second?
I've probably been
doing it every minute of every day of my life. But there's other phenomena too. There's the sell in May, walk away.
You know,
sell in May, walk away. There's October, crash month, that they like to call it. There's a few other sort of these phenomena that occur throughout the year. And so a few years back, I had a look at it. And I went back as far as I could with Aussie data, and it goes back quite a ways. And when you eyeball it, you say, actually, there's something to this. You know, when I look at those, it does tend that more Decembers tend to be better than other months. The market does tend to go up.
Yep.
But I applied some statistical tests to it, and without getting too far down the rabbit warren, you get to a conclusion, a mathematical, robust conclusion that yes, although that is generally true, it is a phenomenon that is still explainable by chance alone. In other words, I'll give you an analogy. Let's say I flip a perfectly fair coin 5 times and it lands on heads 4 times.
Yep.
Now, I could argue that I'm far more likely to get heads because look, I flipped it 5 times and it's come out. But that is something that chance alone can explain under small samples. And when you're looking at market, even though we can go back 50, 60, 70 years, you know, before it starts to get very silly, we don't really have enough of a data set there to conclusively say there is something to this that chance alone could not explain.
I think that's true, mate. Although I will say, just for what it's worth, other people are making real money on the back of this. And so
Who is?
Well, the market is up. That's the point. Like, so we can say statistically it shouldn't be the case, or it might still revert to something else.
Right.
But the weight of money is the weight of money. People have made money. If it thus far has been the case, that December it goes up more than it goes down, then it's been a smart thing to have bought in December.
And yet you don't do it.
Well, that's not the same thing, right? So I don't think it's necessarily likely to be sustainable. But you know, if you knew that people were all of a sudden buying pink shirts rather than blue shirts, even if it's a fad, you can still make a lot of money selling pink shirts for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
So I guess I'm just making the point that we would never suggest you invest alongside it, but I think it's a little bit too glib for us to poo-poo people who have made money by recognizing something and taking advantage of it while it's true.
Yeah. Okay, that's probably fair. I would say this as well. Probably. Others that are considering doing this, remember, even if you take it as being, yes, statistically valid or whatever, when we say this has been observed more often than not, there are plenty of Decembers out there.
Yes.
Dozens of Decembers where people would have thought, hey, I might actually give this a crack and then lost a bunch of money.
So I think that's the key point. And I think it's probable that there are short-term trends in the market that are true in the experience of the investors, but expecting it to be true always and frankly every time but before and forever after this, that is where it breaks down.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do it.
Exactly.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Are you an Oriton fan?
Not as much as my wife, unfortunately. My credit card.
So, a suggestive kind of comment.
My credit card will attest to the fact that we haven't done quite enough to keep Oriton afloat, but geez, we gave it a good crack. We gave it a very good shot.
So, for those that don't know, Oriton, a luxury brand, they make purses, handbags, some nice leather goods, and kind of sort of. You know, it's along that retail spectrum, probably not super high premium, but up towards that end, right?
It's pretty expensive.
It's pretty expensive stuff. And this is a business that's been around for a while, and even if you go back, I think it was through till 2011, 2012, this business had a phenomenal history. You look, you could bring up some of the numbers here and you go, sales and earnings have grown every year. They've paid a consistent dividend. They've got investment nerds like us could make the argument that, wow, they've got a really powerful brand that gives them some kind of a competitive advantage. And to admit it, I used to work with you on ShareAdvisor. We recommended it back in the day.
We did indeed. I think that was your fault.
It's totally your fault. I was dragged kicking and screaming along with it. But we did. We recommended it. And we made all of those arguments.
Yep.
And then things started to go wrong.
Yes.
What went wrong?
You know what? We talked about pink shirts and blue shirts. The fundamental thing went wrong with Oraton is it simply stopped being the most relevant leather goods manufacturer in the country.
Didn't they? They also had some other issues, though, with license agreements.
They did. They lost a deal with Polo Ralph Lauren. That's right. So we recommended it just before they lost that, which was
great timing.
Terrible timing. They had it for 20 years.
Yep.
There was no reason to believe they were going to lose it, except they did. And so we got caught.
That hurt.
And we sold it not too long after, but it was unfortunate at a loss.
Yeah. Then they got involved with Gap.
Yeah, they tried with Gap. They tried with Brooks Brothers suits.
Yep.
Basically, Oraton realized that they had the Oraton and the Polo Ralph Lauren brands previously. They knew that Oraton alone wasn't enough, so they tried to find some other brands to basically fill up some scale. So it wasn't so much a gap in earnings per se. It was simply a case of the structure of the business needed more revenue to justify the overheads. And in the end, they couldn't get the revenue. Yeah. And so the company was put into administration this week.
And that core brand of theirs that they own themselves, no one was going to take that away from them. And even that has suffered. Again, changing consumer preferences. They weren't going to discount for a long time. I was very behind that idea. I think when a luxury brand starts discounting, it could potentially get into trouble. But then they did start discounting, and they started discounting very substantially, and it all started to unfurl.
I think that was there's been a really interesting change in retail. We won't go into it in a whole lot of detail now, but overseas have had the same problem. The retail market has changed. The GFC taught us as a society to want to expect discounts. And so I don't know of any business that was discounting and stopped, which managed to survive the following onslaught. And I think as much as we might like to think that some of those major brands don't have to discount, the simple reality that their competitors are discounting means you either join the game or you kind of go belly up. There's very few companies in a discounting world that can actually survive without taking part.
There are some really interesting exceptions, you know, Rolls Royce or something. You get to like the Uber premium. Right. You know, you walk in, they don't, if you have to ask the price, you can't afford it, right? And they know that. Nice and that's brilliant. But they are way out there on the spectrum.
Yep. And I think I don't necessarily blame Oraton for discounting. They couldn't have avoided it either way. Quite frankly, I don't think they simply would have lost too many sales if they didn't do it. And if they did do it, you lose margin. So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah. The problem was that the business itself just wasn't large enough, didn't have enough scale to support the overheads of its business. And frankly, by the way, they're also seeing falling sales, which doesn't help. But the combination of those two is just a really, really desperately tough situation. Interestingly enough, too, for what it's worth, mate, just a quick reflection. Oraton was held up 5-6 years ago as the poster child. Massively high returns on equity is one of those phrases you'll hear. Plenty of people said this is a great business because it has all these returns on equity. That's all great.
Yep.
I think what it probably shows you is that it's about the future, not the past.
Yep.
And so, yes, it's useful to look back and see what's going on. And if that does continue, that's great.
Yeah, good historicals are a good indicator of a good company.
But they
are not a guarantee of the future.
Right. And so that's where you need to be very, very careful. It was held out as the best, I think it was probably the highest ROE on the market.
It was way up there.
And yet 5 years later, it's gone broke. So, it's just a really important reminder. So, yes, of course, the business's financials matter. That's all that matters at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But historical financials don't matter anywhere near as much as the future financials. That's the message you've really got to heed from this story, unfortunately.
One final thing, which is I have to mention on that, a colleague of ours pointed out, isn't it interesting that they decided to make this call just prior to Christmas?
Yeah.
You would think that you would give it one last sort of hurrah, let's see how good Christmas, the biggest sales period of the year, and yet they decided to pull up. And I should mention, they are going to continue to trade. It's gone into voluntary administration, so it will continue to trade as this process plays out.
Yep.
But you speculated, and again, this is pure speculation, I think it was a reasonable one and an interesting one, was to say that perhaps some kind of covenant was tripped in terms of their lenders.
Yeah, that's...
I don't want to put you on the spot.
It was
a pure thought bubble. No, it was an interesting one.
No, you're right, and it's worth commenting on. I don't want to make allegations, but I'll offer some sort of general questions that I have, and we can see what the results are. Yeah. So you're right. Normally, a normal business that simply had more room, it's got more debt, it could have drawn down from its banker. Mm-hmm. So there was no immediate cash crunch that we're aware of. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably two things at play. One is that, frankly, so a covenant is a set of criteria that a bank puts in. Says, we'll only let you have this loan as long as you maintain certain conditions. Mm-hmm. And for most companies, it might be a certain rate of sales, mm-hmm. or a certain sales growth, or a certain level of profitability.
Sometimes it's even margin. Market cap, like share price in a way.
Indeed, we won't go down that rabbit hole now. But you're right, that's another thing for another day.
Yep.
But you're right. So that's important. So maybe, just maybe, even though it had more room and it could borrow more money in theory, the rules around that borrowing maybe were tripped, and maybe there was a problem. The banker said, guys, that's it, we're out.
Yeah.
It's also possible, I do think, mate, in this environment that directors are very, very, very scared of litigation. Mm. And we saw with Channel 10, effectively, remember back in the day, Lachlan Murdoch and Bruce Gordon sent a letter to the directors and said, guys, just so you're aware, if you keep trading, we may have to take you to court for doing the wrong thing.
Just FYI.
If we don't get paid back, we're going to hold you personally accountable. And the director of 10 went,
whoa,
screw that.
Where's my upside?
Right. Well, screw that. We're going to administration right now. And they literally did. They got a letter on, I think, the Saturday, and they're in administration by the Monday morning. So, you know, when it comes to it, there is a litigious society. There is a lot of directors who are rightly concerned about their reputations and their finances.
It's easy to laugh at until if you're in that situation yourself, right?
Right.
Think, geez, what would
so
I
to
do?
Whatever degree, the company might have said, look, do we throw the dice and get through Christmas? Or do they sit there and think, if we get to February and this is worse,
yes,
someone's going to come to us and say, you guys kept trading and things got worse and it's your fault. You should have known.
Yes.
And so I desperately hope, for the sake of our economy, quite frankly, and our business environment, our business community, that wasn't the case. You know, I think as a society, we're poorer if directors are scared out of taking reasonable risks in the course of normal business. Mm-hmm. So I desperately hope that wasn't the case, but I wouldn't at all be surprised if it was.
We shall see.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
We don't have any sound effects this week.
We don't, but you still have to saddle up on your high. Oh, jeez.
Foley artist extraordinaire.
Oh, mate. Where's Liam when you need him?
Where is my stallion? My high horse this week.
To be clear, Liam isn't your stallion. Just so
not
we're
just
very
young,
clear.
But I want to underscore that as well. Yes.
Okay, good.
I'm going to have a go. This is what gets me, and this might sound a little counterintuitive. I hate the convenience and low cost of online brokers. I hate it.
Oh, good.
I hate
this will be great. This is the equivalent of walking out in the middle of the street and saying, I hate low energy prices.
That's right.
I want to pay more for my
electricity. I want to pay
God
more for when I trade.
Why are petrol
and
prices higher? That's what I want to know.
I want it to be harder. The fact that I can pick up my smartphone and buy and sell shares and it costs me, you know, 10, 15, 20 bucks, I hate it.
I'm going to ask you why in a minute, but first, I'm going to do you a deal.
Okay.
I will charge you 50 bucks to place your trades on your behalf. What do you say? I'll make it hard. I'll make you wait, and you can pay me 50 bucks. Deal?
No, I'm okay.
100 bucks.
I'm okay.
100 bucks.
Well, hear me out.
200 bucks.
Here's my rationale.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
My rationale is that it's. I think that when it is so easy and so cheap, it enables us to make decisions without really thinking through them. Now, when you go to buy a house, there is a lot of cost involved.
And the paperwork.
And it takes a long time. And you are not going to wake up. You're not going to go for a morning walk, pass a house and go, yeah, and buy it. Right? even if you had all the money, you're probably not going to do that. You're probably going to have quite a bit of a think about it. Now, this is a theory. I've got no way to sort of test this. But I would imagine that if I said to ordinary Australians, it's going to cost you $500 every time you buy or sell shares. And it's going to take 3 weeks before that transaction can go through, that most people are going to think a lot harder about the companies that they buy, and they're going to go into that with a very different time frame, and they're going to be doing it with more significant sums of money that, again, makes it A, more worthwhile, but B, puts more emphasis on that decision. They will do more due diligence. They will make better decisions. It'll be more cumbersome. It'll be more costly, but the outcome will be better.
Okay, but why do I have to pay the price for that? Surely if I want to trade, I mean, I'm
well, you won't. Right? This is there is no reality where this is going to happen.
Why should you want me to have to pay more for my brokerage just because you can't keep yourself under control?
Well, it's one of those things. Who was the bloke who won the Nobel Prize recently? We talked about it.
Daniel Kahneman? No, Richard Thaler.
Thaler. And he's
they're
sort
both
of,
Nobel laureates.
They are. And they're sort of talking about these things that we can do to sort of protect ourselves from ourselves.
Pre-commitment devices,
these kinds of things. And I think that's where it really comes from. And it's obviously a worse deal when you think about it. But if it has this consequence of stimulating more prudent action, then there's probably a greater good to it, even though the immediate consequence is more onerous. Have I sold you?
No. Well, yeah, actually, yeah. I really, really hate it when I have to agree with your high horses.
Yes.
It drives me mad. Yes, I would happily actually, I would put a government tax on brokerage if it was me. And I think your point of it, does it happen? No. I would make a $100 minimum brokerage on a tax on brokerage, and I would probably put that money towards some sort of financial literacy course or something else. The only thing I would say is I think I would differentiate personally between buying and selling. I would make buying very, very simple and very cheap.
Yes,
because
that's a very good
people
point.
Who want to put $500 or $1,000 into a share investment shouldn't have to be slugged, even $20, let alone $100.
Sure,
I think
sure.
If you're buying, you probably should be able to buy for $5, but I absolutely would make it $100 to sell. And I think there is a very good reason for that, because if you then want to take your money out and go and waste it somewhere, if you want to go and flip it and put your money into something else, if I knew I could get in easily, but it was hard to get out, I think that would really change the story. And frankly, if I think the government could frankly say, look, the average brokerage is $20 a trade. How about make the average buy $5, and the average sell $35? There's a buy for every seller. So the brokerage is no worse off.
Yeah.
I think that would be a much, much smarter way to go. And I think we should put that on our platform for the Motley Fool Party when we stand for election.
It is never, ever, ever going to
happen. Vote one, the Motley Fool. Written and authorised by Scott Phillips.
It is never, ever, ever going to happen.
Come on, why not?
Here's the thing, right? So even in our time frame, I worked for the first online broker in the country, and they at the time their
You're
rates.
That old?
Yeah, I am.
Jesus.
And the internet's just not that old, really. Is the better way of looking at
Dude,
it? I would argue.
Nice try.
Yeah.
Do you know? Don't Worry, Be Happy was released 29 years ago today.
Was it
29 years ago?
Jeez,
how's that possible?
So when I was two, that doesn't. That doesn't make sense.
Dude, you weren't.
You've broken my chain of thought now.
That's okay. What, you weren't saying anything that interesting anyway?
I've gone completely blank.
It's 31 minutes in. Let's finish it off.
On that note, don't forget.
Don't let this bit out.
It was going to be so interesting.
I know.
It was going to be so poignant.
And that's why I deserve a Nobel Prize.
That's exactly right. You can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast. How embarrassing.
And you should.
This isn't live, but it's as good as live, right? Recorded live. So it's kind of like...
Live, after this,
there's going to be lights flashing on people's smartphones. Come listen to the idiot.
We can say whatever the hell we want right now, and it's guaranteed not going to be edited out of this podcast.
See what the idiot's got to say.
I might sing at the end of this podcast.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm wrapping it up. Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast. You can listen to that through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app. Oh, my gosh. And if you like what we're doing, please give us a big, fat 5-star rating.
And how fast can you talk,
come along to fool.com.au/MMM and get a bit more foolish goodness. But until next week, full on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.